Welcome back to Shatteringness. At this point, we were going to transition into Proverbs 6, but we've got Nick on the line who has provided some very thoughtful questions over the many years of this program. And so I want to continue to listen to what Nick has to say. Let me summarize what I've heard from you thus far, Nick, and then you can correct me if I'm wrong. And we do have Kirk here. We did have Larry briefly, but Larry's had to go. Nick, you made a statement that that normally would be that I would lash out at very strongly against, but I just listened to you where you said that my books, which I would assume would be primarily Yada Yam and An Intro to God, are being used like a Bible. And those are fighting words with me, because Bible means with veil. It means confusion. That is the antithesis of how most people are using it. Most people use Yada Yam, Introduction to God, as a resource, as a tool to better understand what Yahweh had to say. And everyone that has read them know that I say constantly that I don't claim to be inerrant, that I'm just an individual who is curious as to what God had to tell us and have devoted a lot of time to translating what he had to say and thinking about it, making the connections. And I share what I have learned as a result. So the point that you made was that you asked on Popular Truth, why did Noah have an altar on the ark? And I explained half of that to you, and then I want you to listen to what I have to say, and then you can move on either with another point or add more to this one. There were two groups of animals that from the Fertile Crescent that Yahweh asked Noah to bring aboard the ark. He values life. And the one was the pair of all of the various animals that lived there, and the second was a very specific group of animals called clean animals, whereby they were needed for the purpose of the atoning, redeeming sacrifice. Now you might say, all right, so if Yahweh was saying that he wants, and he did describe, he provides instructions on what animals are appropriate for this, and when the timing is appropriate for this, of celebrating Pesach and the invitations in this way, and what to eat, there's two things that you need to know. One is that the sacrifice wasn't a religious sacrifice. The person wasn't making a sacrifice. The altar, the purpose of the altar was to prepare the animal in such a way for consumption by the individuals and by the family, such that they understood the symbolism of Yahweh's plan. And that Yahweh used this visual and actual presentation of these sacrifices for the express purpose of people understanding that when he himself became the sacrificial lamb, that he wholly and completely resolved this issue forever. But that prior to him doing that in the fourth millennia of human existence, these sacrifices served to benefit those who were being benefited and nurtured by them, who came to understand what Yahweh would do through them. And that once Yahusha has now fulfilled his promise, we only do them now for the purpose of, again, remembering and understanding what he has done on our behalf. So that's the purpose of all of that.
Well, the first thing first, I feel uncomfortable with the word sacrifice. I think that the only sacrifice that there was done is by Yahweh, and the only sacrificial lamb was Yahusha. So I mean,
okay. By the way, in that regard, you and I are in absolute complete accord in that regard. I don't like the word sacrifice as it relates to anyone other than Yahweh and Yahusha. You and I are in agreement because we are not sacrificing the animal. If you eat the animal, like, for example, last night I had a steak. I did not sacrifice the cow to have that steak. Yeah.
We're in agreement. And popular truth too. That's exactly what I said. You don't
sacrifice
the burger that you eat.
The reason that I think Yahweh uses, and we don't really know, when we use sacrifice, we're using an English word. And there are two or three Hebrew words that are translated into this English word, but the English word carries connotations that my guess is the Hebrew word did not carry. And that really means to butcher the animal, to prepare the animal for consumption, and that this platform was designed to do that.
Another word would be for a sacrifice. It would be an offering. Because in his instructions, mm-hmm. he was talking about offerings and all kinds of offerings, including the food offering where you provide flour and olive oil. And that's what I tried to tell the people, that it's hard to sacrifice the olive oil. It does not.
God doesn't take any of it. But, you know, by the same token, God doesn't take any of the lamb either. And so even offering, it's really Yahweh's making the offering. But the term offering, how about we define offering like this, Nick? We're offering to understand, to act upon, and to accept Yahweh's provision.
I mean, we don't think any different. I mean, I've been trying to explain what I heard on the radio.
Yeah.
Let me tell you where the things go wrong and why is your book actually being used as a Bible. Because when I start challenging it, when I mm-hmm. talked about the altar, first of all, the question was, did the Noah build an altar? I didn't know if I have read it wrong in that somewhat good translation on yawakara.com. And so I asked people on Unpopular, did he build the altar? And I didn't actually knew that he built it on the ark. I thought that I read in Farsi that he built it after the flood was over and on the land, not on the ark.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So that was my first question, if he did build it or not. And after I was let know that he did, I asked why, can we build one too? And I was told no. So then my third question was, why not? And this is when people start using your book as a Bible, where they were pointing in your book a spot, not just your book, I mean, the Bible thing too. It was mix up. It was a link to a Bible. They were sorry for it, yes. And links to your book were correctly translating where the Yahweh lash out at the people he didn't like. The people who betrayed him, the people who didn't listen to him, the people who cheated on him. And that's where he speaks to them very viciously, saying, what is your sacrifice to me? Right? And so this is where I take issue with what people in Unpopular Truth did. They took the verses out from the context. And they put them in their explanations where, by definition, that would be like, well, you see, he says right here, he doesn't like sacrifice, so we better not to do those.
And it's true. He has that.
And I pointed out that it's completely not the same thing as what I'm thinking in trying to accomplish. I didn't piss him off.
Yeah, okay.
He doesn't
hate me. Let me try to drill down here a little bit more, then I want Kirk's response as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yanowat gave Noah very explicit instructions of when, where, and how, and out of what, even the dimensions of the ark. And Noah did what no one else was willing to do. He listened to Yahweh's instructions, and he acted upon them, and he built the ark. What we can see in Yahweh's instructions and Noah's response are indeed the five terms and conditions of the covenant. It's a marvelous word picture of what Yahweh does for us via Abraham, and how we, if we listen to Yahweh and follow his instructions, can be part of the covenant. That is the primary purpose of the story. Now, did the event actually happen? Yes, and there's a whole chapter devoted to the event of the flood. But that's the purpose of the story, is to explain how we go about engaging in the covenant and what the benefits are for those of us who engage versus those of us who do not.
And
I would say that the altar is a very minor part of that story. Now, I understand that you understand the big picture here, but you were wondering, okay, so in the context of... there's no reason for you to build an ark. And the fact that Noah built an altar, which would mean that all he did is he set a stone platform on top of another set of stones to make it easier for him to prepare the animal for its consumption.
Just like making a table.
Just as you do not need to build an ark because Yahweh has an ark for you, it's already built, called the covenant. I don't think you need to build the altar because he has already provided the sacrifice on the upright pillar of the doorway to life on your behalf.
Yeah,
but if you like the symbolism, if you think that the symbolism helps you and others better understand what Yahweh is offering, then I don't think there's any harm in doing it.
So,
what do you think, Kirk? Let's get Kirk's input. What do you think, Kirk?
While y'all were talking, I looked up the ancient meaning, the oldest meaning of the word sacrifice, the English word for sacrifice, in Hebrew, and it doesn't mean, it's not that convoluted. It means, number one, feast, and circle.
Right.
And the circle was because they would gather around in circles around the together and have a feast. So I take on an altar. You got to have an outdoor grill somewhere. I mean, I have one. So I mean, where are you going to prepare the food? It's just a place to cook. So we take those words like sacrifice out of English religious meanings, and the word is real simple. It's a chet and a gimel.
He also provided the clear instructions on how to build one and what not to use. So you can't call your grill an altar. It's not an altar. It should be uncut stones, not touched by man's hand. Make sense?
Yeah.
Sure.
Yes. Just as you can build a menorah perfectly akin to Yahweh's instructions and how to make each of the cups and how to provide the oil to it and how it should be designed, I don't see any problem building one because it will share the message of that 6+1 plan and light and the value of the olive oil. The same thing is true, and I thank you, Kirk, for explaining the nature of what it meant. It is to provide for a feast. Because the animal is consumed by those that are there. Yahweh would have described, when he's conveying his word pictures, he is trying to tell us as much as he possibly he can. Now, he says, I don't want the stone cut. You know, if you look at cut stones were used to make pyramids.
And all sorts of religious artifacts.
So, you know, that's perhaps why he's saying, you know, I'm going to provide the stone. You don't need to cut it.
Can I provide you with the reason for an altar? And I think that you will agree with that reason, too.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure that you will. You had kids. I mean, you have kids, but you had them when they were young and little. And I'm at that point where my youngest daughter just learned how to write letters, and so she uses the scissors and she cuts out all those little hearts and she writes with mistakes my name or daddy, love daddy, and stuff. And she offers them to me. And do I need that heart? No. Would I rather her to, instead of giving me a heart, pay attention to what I'm telling her, to what I'm teaching her, to what I'm, I want her to understand? I would give all of her heart that she gave me away if she, if I would be able to have her do that one thing, listen and follow the direction. And exactly what actually Dode mentioned, again, in Unpopular Truth, I have learned something new that where Dode said once to Yahweh that, Yahweh, I know you don't need a sacrifice. I know if you would want one, I would give you one. What you really want is you want me to listen. Exactly what I just explained to you with my little
bit.
I don't need to hurt, but I would much rather have her listen to what I'm trying to explain to her. Now, when she does that, not sacrifice, offer me that little heart, and I don't need it, do I take it? Yes. Why am I doing it? I am doing it for a pleasure of both of us. It pleases me as much as it pleases her. So when you do that, when you bring that flower with oil, you don't sacrifice nothing. You please yourself first. You please and Yahweh might just be pleased with you alone because you're doing this one little thing that he actually instructed the set-apart nation on how to do. Now, the connection I'm making in here is that before Yahweh actually have created that set-apart nation where he instructed them on how to perform all the offerings, people already knew how to perform the offerings. Otherwise, Noah wouldn't know how to do it because Noah did it before the written version of a Torah. So he was able to do it there.
Yahweh was talking to him. And Yahweh doesn't have to provide for us how he everything he had to say to Noah, just like he doesn't have to provide for us everything he said to Abraham. But with Abraham, he specifically says, I gave my my Torah, my teaching, my instruction to him. So, yeah, we would naturally assume that Yahweh did this.
So if you think if I will decide to get messy and I will do follow exact directions in the levities or whatever, I mean, wherever he tells to set apart nation on how to perform the sacrifice, do you think that will anger him in any way if I do that?
No. No, I don't think so. And
exactly
I, listen,
my point.
I,
and you know
yeah,
where
I think
I got
that it's, and by the
that,
and by the way,
I got it from. That's what I tried to explain there.
Yeah, and I think that that there is when it comes to listening to what God has to say and responding to what He is saying, the attitude by which we do it is the single most important aspect of it. The attitude that you're saying, you're not doing this because you're trying to become saved by doing, you know, a certain number of things. You're saying that God provided these instructions. Yeah, these instructions help us understand the role that He has played in enabling us to live forever with Him as part of His covenant. And I enjoy this, and therefore I'm going to respond. And since He instructed Israel to do this, you know, you're saying you already know that Yahweh has made the sacrifice through Yahusha. But what you're doing is this is a way that you and Yahweh can interact, just like you and your daughter have interacted. And you're focusing on something that, that he explained.
You understood exactly what I was trying to say, exactly what I how hard was it for you to understand what I'm trying to say?
Yeah, it would. Well, first of all,
somebody tried to mock me.
So I know, and that's right, and that's unfortunate. But let me say that I have two advantages that would not be on the three advantages really that are not prevalent on Larry's site. And you know, you understand, Larry is a very good friend of mine. But Larry is one of my very favorite people in the whole world. So I'm a huge, huge friend and advocate of Larry. But I have three advantages with you, Nick, in this opportunity in understanding the mindset that you have right here that Larry would not have. One is, I've known you for a long time. I know you as the guy that called the show first trying to defend Muhammad and his pedophilia. That was our first phone call, and that was many years ago. And I have known you as the guy that has called in many times and has grown to have a tremendous interest in Yahweh, and who has chosen, based upon that interest, to educate yourself with an open mind and an inquiring mind, and has become part of the covenant. So I know you as a brother. I care a lot about you as an individual. You know, when I see your name up there, that comes across to me as this guy is part of my family. I like him a lot. So
the thing,
I have history. I have history with you.
Larry there. I did not talk to Larry there. Larry okay. did not. I mean, Larry has said something, but I haven't even had a chance to read his response.
Okay. All right. So it's the site as a whole, and we shouldn't. Right. Okay. Let's leave Larry out of it. Larry has called back, and I think he's gone again. But the fact is that I know you. I have a history with you, and I like you. I mean, quite honestly, I like you. And so I'm naturally predisposed because of our history together to listen to what you have to say, which is why I did not respond aggressively or angrily by the reference to Bible. I don't want to underestimate the value of relationship. You and I have a relationship. We've only known each other over this program, over the telephone, but we've grown to know each other. We've had a lot of interesting discussions over a period of time. You know, Yahweh had a real affinity for Dode, David. They had a lot of discussions over the years. Dode did some things along the way, I'm sure, that Yahweh didn't like very much. But because they had a relationship, because they had done so many things, they had invested so much together and communicated so many things together, I am quite certain that when Dode said something or did something that Yahweh didn't like, Yahweh gave him a lot of wiggle room. That's just what we do. You know, I'm very close to Scott, who produces this program. Scott has a license to get by with a lot more in terms of yanking my chain than most people I've encountered along life's way. Because, you know, I respond pretty harshly, you know, when people say things I don't like. I'm going to give you a lot of slack because I like you. So that part of it. I mean, the second thing is, Nick, the medium of communication. One of the things I have learned in along life's way is that people read what you write in a tone that is very often the antithesis of what you intend. And that as you are writing something, you're vocalizing it in your mind in a non-confrontational tone, and yet somebody is seeing it in a confrontational way. And it's just the difference in the spoken word and the written word. It's hugely different. Hugely different in the way people respond. And I think that's a significant part of it. And I think the third is that that this program exists to expose the flaws in human institutions so that people start to question them and to share the validity of Yahweh's nature and plan and offering. And Unpopular Truth was conceived originally for a singular purpose, and that is to show those who are religious that the God of the Torah, prophets, and Psalms is not religious. And so you're in a, without knowing you, without knowing your history, without the spoken word and the written word, the statements that you made could easily be misconstrued as religious in nature on a site that exists, was founded primarily to expose and condemn the religious view of God. You that wasn't your intent, but that's probably how a small thing became a big thing.
Would you accept the challenge from anyone else but me if it comes to what you have written, what you have put down on the paper? Would you accept the challenge from any? Right.
Yeah, it depends. It depends on the subject and the tone of the individual, though. I mean, sometimes if somebody is challenging and they're belligerent or they're unwilling to recognize when they're wrong, like if you had made the argument that our salvation is dependent on doing everything that Yahweh said, so I'm going to build the altar exactly the way that He instructed, because you can't be saved without obeying, then we would have had a short conversation.
I'm sorry, but yes, and I know exactly what you're saying, and I've been trying this first two, I tried to bring it up in the non-threatening way, but the last comment made at Temple, it was meant to be vicious, it was meant to be sarcastic, it was meant to be mock me. I'm trying to be, and then there's, wouldn't you do the same thing? I mean, if you say someone is mocking you, wouldn't you bring some sarcasm in your voice?
Yes, of course.
And the thing is, I don't even want to talk about it anymore. I mean, they have their own thing, and it does. I mean, it's in the past. It's fine. The one thing I can tell you that
I know the people. I know the people that spend a lot of time there. Their heart's in the right spot. Now, you know, there is a little bit of a difference too, in having lived 15 years of my life, I've lived in the crosshairs of constant ridicule. You know, what we have to say, what I have to say about Christianity, or Judaism, Islam, patriotism, the military, all of that. I'm constantly found in the crosshairs of criticism. I don't mind being criticized if I'm being criticized on behalf of something I'm sharing that I think is consistent with Yahweh's teaching. But one of the things I've learned is that if I respond overly sarcastically or try to belittle someone other, I mean, I have no problem belittling the Pope. I got no problem belittling the president. Very different, you know, they're asking for it. But an individual, you know, when you stoop to belittling them, as opposed to just let's hash this out, very seldom results in something good. So, I happen to think you're a thoughtful individual. I've got no issue with what you're doing. It makes sense to me. And Nick, one of the things that I've learned along the way is that one of the things that's going to make eternity interesting is that we do have a different reaction to things. Our attitudes and our perspectives are a little different. Our personas are a little different. So, for example, I'm not going to go out in my farm here and make an altar. But I personally love the analysis of the instructions on the altar as to what they may represent. And I'm going to spend time thinking about them. The fact that for yourself and for your daughter, you're going to actually make one, I've got no issue with that. I've got no issue. I don't think you've got any issue with my analysis. And I think the moment we take the approach of saying that our interpretation is the only valid one, we run into a very uncomfortable, inappropriate position. I think what we ought to be saying is, this is what Yahweh told us. Here's what we can learn by it. And the fact that we may view some things, particularly the details, slightly differently, I think that only adds to the richness of the tapestry.
View child, I've always stopped being childish, and I will going to let you get back to the important stuff, which is teaching.
Okay, then thank you. And Nick, it's a good point, and maybe it's a good lesson for all of us, is that that I think it is important to accept and capitalize upon, act upon Yahweh's teaching regarding the big picture stuff. And he is really explicit as it relates to, he has one covenant and how we participate in it, and that he has one Torah and how we learn from it, what it means to observe. And he has seven invitations that he's invited us to participate in, and they're really important. And the big picture stuff is really important to us. The details along the way are all the colors and shadings that help us understand. And I don't think God would have provided so much detail if he didn't enjoy the kind of the one-on-one voyage of discovery through his testimony that we all go on. And I personally think, I was smiling as you were engaging in this way with him.
I have to go, but I will listen to podcast. And thank you so much for your attention.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Nick. That was a phone call that I thought was going to be fraught with peril when Nick first brought up Yada Yada is being used as a Bible, but I think it turned out okay. What do you think, Kirk?
Well, Nick, I remember listening to him about 3 years ago. My gosh, his understanding is so far removed from where it was. I mean, it's
grown so far. I think that's a celebration. I think you're viewed it the same way.
Chewed on that bone, didn't he?
Yeah, here's a guy from a completely different background, with a completely different view of life, who found Yahweh credible, found his presentation enlightening, and who has chosen to act upon Yahweh's covenant. And has invested the time to study what Yahweh has to say. That for me is worth celebrating.
While knowing that he's going to call back, let me give you the other three for sacrifice.
Okay, please.
And we have, spell it. It's got a Z and a B and a CH, a Chetz or a Hetz.
Okay. Before you spell it, do you share Nick's view, which happens to be my view, but that doesn't mean you need to agree with us?
Sure.
The sacrifice is really an uncomfortable word to use in describing, the preparation of the Passover lamb for our own nourishment and benefit.
Yeah, because, I mean, God provides everything. Yahweh provides.
Right.
You know, this is, we're basically just having a feast. I mean,
right. I don't even like the term offering, because we're not offering God anything.
No.
Other than we're offering, offering to listen to him. We're offering to act, upon his instructions. But go ahead. With that in mind, so the three of us are on the same in the same boat here, as I'm sure is everyone on Popular Truth and our good friend Larry.
Yeah. So this word is the killing of an animal for food or an offering. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and you're,
yes.
So we've got killing for food. I mean, a really interesting one was Nehetz, which is also translated into sacrifice in English, and it is to approach and come near, and also an offering.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, but the really good one was a Nechets, depends on whether you pronounce it, H or C-H. It's a it means to continue the inheritance, and because it's a nun and a chet, and outside, I'm sorry, continue the inheritance outside. And it also means where a shepherd would take his flock after a journey and allow them to stop and rest and recharge. But I like the first one, continue the inheritance outside, because that's so that's what would happen in Noah's Ark. They've been in there for 40 days. They've been battered back and forth. Yah has allowed them to live. And they get to come out, but the inheritance, the people, his family, gets to continue. The nun is an inheritance. It's the seed.
Right.
And continue outside of the ark. So now they can carry on.
And by the way, if they did not prepare those animals for consumption, would they have survived 40 days? Would any member of Yahweh's or of, Noah's family have survived the 40 days?
The whole trip is about survival. I mean, survival.
Yeah, so they would have starved, right? Right. You ever watch any one of these survival shows on television?
I don't watch them a lot, but I know what you're talking about. Yeah, they
okay. And what happens? What happens if they don't find an animal protein to eat?
They start to deteriorate, like everything.
Yeah, their mind is the first to go.
Yeah.
And beyond their mind, because our minds function on protein. And then the body loses all of its energy. It loses its drive. And people just give up. And they shrivel up and die.
Yes, first.
And so we were designed to consume protein. It's what causes us, it fuels our brains, it fuels our sense of willpower. It gives us the energy to act. We don't eat, we die.
Yeah.
We eat, we are nourished to live. And it's the idea here is that for us to live, there has to be the shedding of blood. An animal has to die for us to live.
Yeah.
And what Yahweh is saying here as it relates to Pesach is that he had to make the sacrifice. He had to sacrifice his the physical manifestation of himself for us to live. You know, that life, perfected life, is somebody's got to pay a price for to turn that which is corrupt into that which is perfect. The penalty, and so he paid it. And so that's part of the message that's being conveyed. And the fact that we can be nurtured by things that are pure and good and beneficial, or that which is not. Which is corrupted. Matter of fact, that Yahweh's antidote for the seven things that he calls an abomination, the six which are which he hates, is being nourished
by
his word, so that his Torah and the terms and conditions of his covenant nourish us. They feed us. Is the antidote for doing any of the seven things that are an abomination.
Can I ask one quick question
from
this morning's thing? Because you and I had talked once a while back about, the road thing coming through has been planned for a long time, because I've read about that. So they knew that was an option. I'm amazed that they're building it right now, because the timing is.
Yes, right now. And committing $46 billion to it. The single largest investment by the Chinese government, I think, in the country's history.
Well, that's one construction project, ain't it? If you had that.
Yes.
The thing that I was going to ask about is, I kind of had thought along the way, the more and more we got into this, that Iran would withhold from participating into the first Magog war. Some of their people may go, but I thought as a country they would probably pull back, because there has to be a motive somewhere. The Chinese don't care about Israel one way or the other. When everything falls apart, and that's about 2031, they're coming down for oil and gas and whatever stuff they need. They don't need Israel one way or the other, but there has to be somebody there that politically would motivate them to want to destroy Israel.
Yeah, and also one of the largest gas and oil reserves in the world. have been found in and around Israel. So that's in the last a few years to a few months in particular, in the Galilee, particularly adjacent to the Golan, one of the largest untapped oil and gas reserves in the world has been found there. And then also off the Mediterranean coast of Israel, one of the largest oil and gas reserves in the world was found there as well. The Chinese are energy hungry.
Yeah, yes. Wow. They're not going to be in a great shape, though, by 2031. I mean, the world is
no. Marginal. No, but, you know, the Chinese are far less engaged, for example, in the Syrian war.
Mm-hmm.
And so with the demise of Russia and the United States and Europe, China is in a very unique and dominant position mm-hmm. in the world. All that China needs is markets to replace the markets that it lost. So, but you know, I don't like emphasizing too much on the Chinese because I just don't see the, other than being part of the advance of socialist secular humanism against Israel in the last days, you know, the Chinese are not all that interesting as it relates to a prophecy, other than they had to have the means to move this many men and material.
Another arrow in the quiver, though. I mean,
it is yet another affirmation that when Yahweh says something's going to happen, he doesn't have to. It doesn't happen miraculously. It happens because man has made bad choices and put the pieces in place for these things to transpire exactly as he said they would. He's not building the road.
No,
they're building the road, and they're building the road.
Yeah,
to do exactly what he said they were going to do. You know, Yahweh had nothing to do with the creation of the Islamic State.
Mm-hmm.
But the Islamic State is turning, destroying Syria, exactly as he said the government of Syria would be overturned. And they have isolated Damascus. And the Russians are now protecting Damascus, but it's only a matter of time. And the timing has to be about 10 or 11 years from now that Damascus will fall. And now we have all the pieces in place for that specific timing. You know, before the Russians engaged, there was no way that Damascus was going to survive 10 years.
No.
Now we know they will survive. But we also know that with the United States and Europe and Saudi Arabia and Kuwait and Russia and Turkey and everybody involved in Syria, there ain't no way that's going to end without overwhelming carnage. What's going to happen exactly as he said it was. And so, you know, you're seeing that in the newspaper, all of the preamble to this very specifics he said were going to happen, all of which would have to be materializing at this very moment for them to transpire in a non-miraculous way on the schedule that he has delineated. He's not doing any of it. He simply reported back to us what was happening.
Well,
I think it's fascinating.
It is fascinating. It is fascinating in a very scary way.
And everything that man is doing to exacerbate his animosity to Yahweh was delineated in those seven abominations, was it not? That I sent you from Proverbs 6:15. Behold, presently, these six things Yahweh hates, and seven are an abomination to his soul. And his soul is, it could be a reference to Yahweh that he thinks they're an abomination. I think that you can't, there isn't anything that can cause Yahweh's soul to become an abomination. And so the reason that I think his is applying to those individuals who are acting in a political or religious or militaristic way in the previous statements, which we'll translate here later this week and next week. But from that we learn that God hates, and that we realize that there are seven things. So there's six things that God hates, and there are seven things that God recognizes are extraordinarily disgusting and harmful to our souls. By the way, on the six things that God says He hates, did you find on any of them homosexuality?
Not at all.
In fact, there wasn't. Did you find that God hates promiscuity?
No.
Did you find that God hates sexuality?
Religious, or you switch in gods from God.
Yeah, it's this. It's fascinating to me that that homosexuality and the promiscuity and the like sexuality has always been this venue both of Islam and Christianity condemning those things.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't make God's list here, did it?
No, it's not.
Very telling. No. Sexuality, promiscuity, homosexuality didn't make God's list. There's nothing even remotely akin to those things. Did, on this particular list, foul speech, you know, using derogatory terms, if you just, you know, use the nasty words. Nasty words didn't make the list either, did they?
No, being impolite doesn't count. I mean, it's
no. No.
You know, there's manners. Manners are not big.
For the socialist secular humanist, did he say, the thing that I hate is intolerance? No. In fact, everything on the list is counterintuitive to religious and politically savvy individuals today. And we'll talk about it tomorrow.